Great adventures of me, Tom Terrific, with Mighty Manfred the Wonder Dog.
I'm Tom Terrific, greatest hero ever. Terrific is the name for me, 'cause I'm so clever. I can be what I wanna be, and if you'd like to see, follow and follow me. If you see a plane on high, a diesel train go roaring by, a bumblebee or a tree, it's me. When there is trouble, I'm there on the double, from Atlantic to Pacific. They know Tom Terrific.
And this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, in the bunker right here in North Central Indiana. Well, there we go, the sound of the wolf. Yeah, right here on Moon's Day morning. Yeah, right here at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the radio show and also for other projects we're into. One of being sending some funds to our good friends that are incarcerated, which most people don't do, but we do. So that's what we like to do. If anybody's got a copy of the Nazi Greens by Walter Dahr, a spare copy, Matt Hale would like to have one. If not, I'm looking around here. I know I've got one someplace, and I was going to start photocopying chapters for him, because the book, I think the cheapest I saw was at least $40. Which is pretty expensive, but we would like to get that to Matt Hale. The only way nowadays we can get those books in with no problem is to order them from a bookseller. But there's all kinds of places where you can get some pretty good deals now. You don't have to just go to Amazon and eBay and stuff like that. There's hundreds of booksellers on there, and sometimes you'd be surprised at how cheap you can get a book. Take care of packaging it and putting postage on it and send it right along to the inmate. In fact, bookstores will tell you that they do a lot of sending books to inmates. Every time I've talked to a bookstore, they've said, yeah, we send them in all the time. Well, a couple of nights ago, I sit up, actually, I think it was real early in the morning. I've got things equipped by my bed so I can record things in the middle of the night and in the wee hours. And so anyhow, I recorded this CFR gathering with some authors that wrote some books about China. The one issue was China. The other issue was NSA. And there's a hell of a lot of good information in this. And if you're serious about what we're doing, it's just like going to college or going to high school or something. You should listen to this, because I spent over 2.5 hours condensing this down to an MP3 file. Well, first I put it on a recorder right off the satellite, and then I transferred it to an MP3 file today, which I had to... put it on. It took me 2.5 hours to make the MP3 file. I've got about 5 or 6 hours invested in this thing, and if I'm sending it out and nobody's listening to it, I'm going to be pissed. But there's a hell of a lot of good stuff in this thing. You know, some guy, you know, some right wingers say, oh, that's a goddamn CFR. Well, I know all about the CFR. Don't tell me about the CFR. But, you know, it seems like when they have these get-togethers in Washington, it's mostly upper middle class toadies or people from the ruling class that sit in on it. I guess they think us poor serfs out here never listen to anything, and so they don't worry too much about if things leak out that shouldn't. However, this is mostly stuff that I have no problem with. It's definitely showing what the Chinese are doing and what they're planning to do and stuff like that, which we need to know. And also then NSA, it really, really goes into NSA and goes back into the Frank Church, Congressman Frank Church investigations or committees back in the 70s. And I was active, very active back then when they were exposing all these sneaky around federal snitching and all that kind of stuff. And I knew all about they had, when the Levy guidelines came along, and yeah, he's a Jew, he was Attorney General, but he did come along with the guidelines to try and rein in the FBI and these snooper groups, which I got to respect that. But I was also there when they tried to get around it, or did get around it, by creating something called the LEIU. And I've talked about this before, Law Enforcement Assistant something. And so they had agents all running around, and so they didn't have to be caught by the snooping committees in Washington. They used private computers put in garages, I know, around in L.A., big computers, or as big as they could get at the time. And they were keeping all these files on people that way. And the only way you could get privy to that stuff was that they would recruit two people in every major police department at the top. And the rest of the cops didn't know anything about this, or were not supposed to know anything about this. So they went right along, right? Even though the Levy guidelines were enforced, they went ahead and were gathering information on people and so forth. That's when Reagan was governor out there, too. Yeah. And let's see, what else did they do? Oh, yeah, they had a congressional hearing, finally, and to investigate the LEIU. And a famous quote that I got while I think I was listening to it or seeing it on TV or something, they asked this agent of the LEIU, which is like, you know, Homeland Security now, they said, how do you determine what's a terrorist? Yeah, because they throw that word around all the time. Well, what do you mean, terrorist? And the guy said, without flinching, he said, a terrorist is who we call a terrorist. A terrorist is who we say is a terrorist. That was his exact words. So they've been playing that game ever since, but you don't usually hear them admit it like that. I had a call from Craig Cobb last night, and we talked it over, and he didn't exactly say it, but I think he's going to plead out on the thing. And I told him, I said, if you don't play hardball on this, they'll take your gun privileges away from you. They'll take your, they'll limit your ability to travel. They'll probably keep you from having a passport and all kinds of things if you plead guilty on this thing. And anything they offer you, you've got to get it down in typed up and signed and duplicate. Don't ever trust anything a federal or a local DA or anybody in a position of authority like that says, because if it's only their word against yours, they're going to lie their ass off. I hated to rub it in, but I told Craig, I said, see, what you don't understand is they are using these kind of little deals to make a great big deal that go, and then the media play right along with them, because the corporate media is part of the Big Brother problem. And they take this deal like you had up there, and they blow it way up. And the reason they do is because they've got no terrorism to speak of. After putting all this Homeland Security and all that kind of stuff, there's only been about 23 people died from terrorism, or 30 people. And half of those were from that Islamic Army major at the Army base a few years ago. And in this tape I'm sending you, this seminar, it tells in there how they knew he was in contact with these Islamic guys in San Diego that were setting up to plow into 9/11, to the towers. They knew he was connected with them, and they let him just keep on going, and then he goes crazy and kills a whole bunch of people, screaming, Akbar, Akbar. Oh, jeez. You know? it's something else. Yeah, I said that they're desperate for somebody to commit terrorism. You know, you've seen several little stupid deals, guys trying to light a fire in their shoe and a guy trying to explode a crazy-ass bomb on Times Square, all stuff that they caught him and snuffed it out, and they talked him into it because they desperately need guys to go out and do something crazy, so they've got an excuse to blow it out of proportion. Oh, you know, it's called the fear program, the fear program, and the right wing tends to fall right into it. The racial struggle, guys who should know better. So Craig Cobb now is going to have to pay the price just for the feds drumming up a big deal about terrorism. These people were terrorism. He walked down the street with a real gun, and they were terrorized. And everybody in the county was terrorized. And the Indians down the road, they were terrorized. Even while they were painting up Craig Cobb's car, truck, and killing his dog and all kinds of shit and driving by threatening to kill him, he was terrorizing them. Jeez. I think he is beginning to understand now, but it's too late. They will fix it so he cannot operate politically again. They'll put him on probation to where he can't do anything. And if he does, they'll put him in prison for hard time. They do that all the time. Oh, we're going to let you have probation, but you can't talk to any of these people you talked to before. You can't go to any meetings. You can't do anything. Yeah, that's what they do. It's pretty clever, really. I mean, you know, you gotta hand it to them. It's pretty clever. And if the mop ever flops, we may do the same thing to them. You know, the mop does flop now and then. Well, I had a few calls came in. Let me play them back for you and see if you can understand them.
The biggest problem is those people, those enemies within the country, have the appearance of white people. They are betraying us more often than any of the browns, blacks, or yellows, and they willingly are collaborating and cooperating with the federal government to see to it that people like yourself and me are incarcerated for life, or at least intimidated, harassed, and beaten down simply for caring, for trying to preserve whatever's left of this crumbling nation. And so I feel no remorse or sympathy for them when they've taken those dives. But admiration and respect for the tax rebellion. But I also know that if you stop paying your taxes for a couple of years, you'll have armed U.S. marshals on your property, camouflage and so forth. I'm paying to Caesar what Caesar's currently to keep these bastards off of my back. Also keeping an eye on these IPAC, ADL, and Council on Foreign Relations meetings where they're grooming their crooks, and they're starting them out on a senator level. And if they play ball, I guess they can advance up a bit into Congress. And if they're kissing their ass until their eyes are cross-eyed, they might make vice president or something like that. So, yeah. The fight goes, and with the total deterioration of Detroit, I'm guessing that Chicago or Atlanta might be the next major city to fall. We will see.
Well, if you listen to that seminar I sent you out today, you can hear all about it from the horse's mouth. However, now this was a CFR-sponsored meeting, but the people that are talking are authors of books that are highly critical of the system. So everything's not always exactly the way it seems. And anybody who's worked intelligence work or something like that knows you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, because invariably there's going to be information that you need that's in the dirty bathwater.
So let's go to where the source of our problem really is. The fang is sunk deep, and the lifeblood is being sucked out of us. How? Central banking. without the Federal Reserve, the World International Monetary Fund, without that crippled, we are a sinking ship. That is their lifeline. That's where we got to cut the head off of the goddamn thing. Otherwise, we're pissing in the wind. Without that, they have no power. No power whatsoever. I'll tell you what, a couple of thousand fanatical fighters would take over each Federal Reserve Bank, each 12 bank, and shut this thing down immediately. And they would be crippled. And that must be the target. Bottom line.
Now, like I always say, if the dog hadn't have stopped his shit, he'd have caught the rabbit, as my daddy used to always tell me. I've heard this stuff for 35, 40 years. If. And we. But has this guy decided to attack a Federal Reserve Bank? I'll bet he hasn't come within 50 miles of a Federal Reserve Bank. You had a possibility working. It was sort of building up there. That was the Occupy movement. You should have been all out there demonstrating along with them and not get into big arguments. Just show force against the system. That was your big chance. And yet, all the right-wing conservatives and white right-wing racists, most of them, are we wouldn't want to go down there. There's even Jews there. There's homosexuals there. There's this and there's that, and I won't associate with people like that, even though we could overthrow this shit and straighten things out and then figure the rest out later. I ain't gonna go down there with those dirty, unwashed people. I heard the same thing during the Vietnam War. Incidentally, I started out supporting the war, the Vietnam War, and was fighting for it in the streets a little bit. And then about halfway through, because of my Marine friends that came back and told me what a joke it was, a sick joke, I went against the war. And in about 71, I refused to pay my federal income taxes, like this guy said. Now, it's a tricky situation. They seized my house once. They tried to seize it twice, but I was able to get it back due to some friends of mine that bailed me out. But that definitely is not the way to go, not unless there's tens of thousands of you. But we did have a thriving tax rebellion going on in 1971 with people all over the country, but not enough. There just wasn't enough. We did take a lot of people out when they were seizing guys' property and businesses and all of that, and they're going to have sheriff sales, and we'd have 30, 40 people come out, and we'd surround the place and sing patriotic songs and all that so loud that the sheriff couldn't auction off the property. But that was just a sort of a delaying attack, but at least we showed something. We were doing something. But even if you destroyed all 12 of the Federal Reserve Banks, which would be fine, I wouldn't want to destroy the building because we'll need the building for other purposes, but even then, I mean, immediately you'd have the North American Command, hundreds of thousands of troops coming down on you. So if you're going to start something like that, it's got to be like the French Revolution. I mean, you got to go balls to the wall and kill anything that gets in your way. And until you get, until you're prepared for something like that, all this talk about we ought to do this and we ought to do that doesn't go anywhere. But you can plan. They can't keep you from thinking. They can't keep you from visualizing. They can't keep you from preparing legally, because most of the things you need are legal and like that. But don't do things that play into their hands.
Yeah, hey, Tommy, Kenneth Dutton here. Just another brief update. Evidently, a C-130 or maybe a C-10 aircraft was documented offloading several tons of heroin in Florida. Not a big surprise to people like us that have been watching this for many years. As far as the military is concerned, you know, the international global cartel of bankers have been using the U.S. as a bulldog across the entire planet. Joe Biden is beyond a snake oil salesman in my book and would put a lamp cord around a newborn baby's neck for a $20 bill. At any rate, you know, it's an illusion of power that they've got, but the real power rests with the white working class that are armed to the teeth. And once that backlash goes, boy, it is hell to pay. Of course, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but always a little bit of propaganda for the listener.
I'm going to have to learn to mute that telephone because it sounds like I'm tearing down the bunker here with all that noise in the background.
Tommy, there's no question dissent is the lifeblood of liberty. These troops, while they have the backing of the government with all of their highest technology and so forth, return home and not a peep out of them against what's taking place on the federal and state government. They're totally useless. I would expect that a revolutionary movement is so far underground that they're going to be very hard pressed to find it. And I can see how the lone wolf strategy was developed through a process of elimination, seeing what didn't work, how you arrived to this decision and this idea, and I agree with it completely. It scares the hell out of the FBI, by the way, and a lot of these other alphabet soup groups, and they're trying desperately to find out who the real lone wolves are, and I doubt that that's going to happen. I tend to agree with all of that message. Just wanted to add something about the troops. It's an all-volunteer military service. If they want to donate their limbs on the battlefield in the sands of Arabia or someplace, that's their prerogative. I don't feel anything towards them. I firmly believe that our presence in Afghanistan is to control the opium trade. By the way, the cocaine smuggling of the Clinton years and the Bush years, that has never stopped, and they just discovered a AC-130 or a 130 aircraft, Air Force aircraft, offloading tons of heroin into Florida. So that military presence back home really doesn't serve us very well because they'll be the first ones turning the firearms on us the minute revolution gets started. So I say, go ahead and spread them out thin across the entire globe. And that way, the system is weakening itself considerably. All right.
I saw you on a special with the Mayhem Boys. You look pretty good. And they really made the Mayhem Boys look bad. I mean, the actors that portrayed them look nothing like them. Maybe you've seen it already, so I guess you know what I'm talking about. But for what it's worth, the Tea Party, for what they're worth, did manage to stop amnesty, at least for this year. According to reports, 1 million Tea Party calls were placed to different politicians, warning them not to go with the amnesty. So they're good for what they are. I don't think they're corporatists. But they are anti-union. They're against our Social Security. They're against Medicare. Of course, they're probably against Obamacare, I'm sure. I know they are. And I'm not too crazy about that either. But I like my Social Security. The unions are all the white man's got to keep his job. You know, you need your Medicare. 88.
Well, the name of that show evidently is The Evil Twins about the Mahon brothers, but I have not been able to catch it. But I'm sure it's a real whack job. Anyhow, look, the Tea Party is funded by the Koch brothers. Billionaires, two of the richest guys in the United States, whose fortune, I've told you before, began with their father working with Stalin before and after the World War II, I believe it was just before, with an oil invention he had made about how to pump oil or something. This is not a grassroots operation at the top. And they came to town here in Warsaw with a great big-ass $100,000 bus. And when I ask, isn't this financed by the Koch brothers? They say, oh, we don't know who the Koch brothers are. Lying through their teeth. I see the Tea Party as another distraction, like a third-party movement or something like that. Well, a lot of people in there mean well, but just meaning well does not get the job done. Now, it's easy to trick the sheep because they get all these people on the telephone calling to not vote for the amnesty. The Mexicans are already here working cheap. They already got what they want. And they just keep coming in, so it's very safe to say, oh, call your legislator and tell them don't vote for amnesty. There doesn't have to be any amnesty. There's 20 million of them here already. And then the question is, what are you going to do about it, Mr. Congress? When are you going to send them back to Mexico or wherever? They're not. The only thing that would ever send them back is a civil war of some type. So it's so easy to fool the masses. You know, it is so easy to fool the boobs. And I'm telling you, there's nobody easier to fool than the conservative Republicans. Because they're mired into the abortion issue and the Christian issue and the Zionist issue and 100 different issues that aren't the core of the problem. So when somebody says Tea Party, say, oh, you mean that outfit that's bankrolled by two of the richest men in America? Like I said, when Ross Perot was running for president, he had $9 billion in the bank, and he said, I can feel your pain. Believe me, nobody with $9 billion in the bank or even $1 million in the bank could feel your pain. They don't give a shit about you, and just forget about it. And if you're dumb enough to go out and vote in this coming up election this fall, I don't know what I could tell you. I might as well close up and go home. You got to be crazy. On the day of the vote, say, I can't go vote. Why can't you go vote? I'm cleaning my guns. You know, that amnesty reminds me of some of the hunters that are not too nice. They go up to a farmer's fence and they see private property, stay out. They just take their shotguns and blast the sign off the fence and go right on in. The Mexicans don't care. They don't care whether they're illegal, legal or not. Get that through your head. They're here. They're making money. They're screwing and having kids and getting on television and on the game shows and all that kind of stuff. And do you think they care? Only a small, small fraction. Oh, yeah, today is President's Day. In other words, what should we call it? Organized Crime Day? Mafia Day? No, I have more respect for the mafia than I do the presidents. Just think back at the crimes that these presidents have committed, especially the war ones. You know, Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson and Clinton and Nixon, Kennedy, all of them. George Bush, they've all been psychopaths. And if you'll listen to some of the latest investigations of the background of these presidents, they weren't fit to even be sit at your dinner table. Their morals were worse than alley cats. And most of them, their wife was running the show. Sometimes maybe that would have been good because the husbands were morons. Well, let's see if I can find some other way to offend more people. I don't think I've been offending enough people lately. I haven't been getting any hate mail lately. Something's wrong. Tell you what I'm going to do today. I think since I've taken up 29 minutes or 30 minutes of the show already, Well, I have a couple of comments here. If I get my microphone over here in front of me and get my notes up here where I can see them. You know, on that water thing, well, a lot of this in California, of course, a lot of it's overpopulation, of course, but a lot of it also is poor irrigation practices in agribusiness. You got to understand now, everybody keeps talking about the farmer like it's the old days, the family farm and, you know, like that, a few people, husband, wife, and a couple of kids. No, that ain't the way it is anymore. Banks and big corporations own massive amounts of American agriculture, and their practices, their farming practices, they stink. Now, I said a long time ago in California, crying about water, they should be convert everything that they can to drip irrigation instead of the old-fashioned methods they used out in the Imperial Valley and in California and the San Joaquin Valley. But I don't know whether they did or not, because I lost interest or lost attention to it. But if you're using the old methods of irrigation, then you're asking for trouble. You're going to use a hell of a lot of water. And then, of course, with all being host to all the Mexicans, Nicaraguans, Asians, more Negro, they're going to use a lot of water, you know. Now, it's probably going to happen the same thing here that's happening in China. They paid higher wages through the American capitalist factories in the big cities to invite the people from the out back to come on into town. Once they've got you in an urban setting, you're trapped. You don't have a place to grow a few crops and feed your family. You may be dirt poor, but you survive. Like when I was a kid, we had 10 acres, which is very small, really. But we had a big chicken house and a big little barn. We had a cow or two, and we raised rabbits, and I had about 200 chickens and a couple of hogs, and we had a big garden, and we could exist from that 10 acres. Well, less than that. Most of that food was grown on half of that. But you see, when they get all the people into the cities, then they got them totally at their mercy. And that's what they're going to work on here. And you heard, if you listen to the thing from the about NSA in China, they'd be buying up large tracts of agricultural land. They're already doing it all over the world, down South America and Africa and all over the place. And who knows how much they bought up here already, using front companies and so forth, to where you don't know it's Chinese. Now, guess what? They want a totally agribusiness, all agriculture in this country, owned by big corporations and banks, and drive the little people back into the cities where you can be more controlled. You're not controlled enough. They're suspicious of country people, because country people can survive, as the song says. So this is a worldwide thing. Herd the people back into giant urban areas, and then you control them, and you feed them if they're good, and you starve them if they're bad, and maybe even starve them if they're good. Now, these giant corporations already control the water supplies in most parts of the country. I mean, every town, even small towns, private companies own the water. And you pay them for the water. If you don't pay them for the water, you don't get the water. Now, luckily, small places like mine, we've got our own wells. But you're going to see the day probably when they outlaw wells in the countryside. They'll use some kind of environmental excuse. I think people don't seem to understand that a giant percentage of the food we raise goes overseas. And the big corporations make the money here off of that stuff. They don't pay the farmer that much. But what they're doing is destroying the land. overusing it like they used to do down south. They overplanted the cotton, didn't let the ground rest. And now we got the problem of the chemicals on the ground, on the land. They're overusing the land to ship things out to foreign countries, or for 20 million Mexicans that are here, and all the blacks and all the Asians and so forth. So sooner or later, the land will be so totally depleted, you couldn't raise a stalk of corn if you sit on the top of a, I don't know. I remember Johnny Cash had a famous saying in a song about that, but I forget what it was now, and if I keep trying, I'll screw it up worse. But you get my point. So the United States, instead of keeping the population static to where it should be, like about 1950, and pretty much all white, and family farms where people actually lived on the farm. Now there's a big move to combined farms, where I know I have a cousin out here, and his son, he's combined his farm with another farm. They got two or three farms, so they're farming five times what my cousin's father farmed, and probably not making much more money. Oh, yeah, and on that NSA thing, takes me back before the church investigation, back when the Minutemen were chasing communists, or people who they thought were communists anyhow, around, and we thought the communists were going to take us over any minute. I think that was overplayed, and I spent a lot of my life fighting these so-called communists, and actually I never met one that I know of. But one night the Minutemen were out there in the streets of Long Beach, and they were shadowing a guy by the name of Stanley Mosk, who was a Jew and a Supreme Court of California judge. And word was that they had communist cell meetings there in Long Beach. And they were interrupted and told to bug off, and these guys that told them to get on down the road were U.S. Army intelligence. So the Army has been doing this kind of stuff for a long time. Now, at this state in my life, I reconsider the fact that, so what if five or six communists had a meeting in Long Beach? That's not going to bring the country down. But we spent billions of dollars fighting communism, and did we win any place? The only place, we didn't even win in Soviet Union. They just went broke. So most of that, my years as an anti-communist, was pretty much a waste of time. Okay, we're going to put DC Scout on here. There's a couple of breaks because he had a couple of things edited in that they were okay, but they didn't quite fit. But so if you hear a break in the show, well, just chalk it up to my poor editing. I like to put people on the show, but when they edit in other things from other shows and stuff, and people I don't know, I tend not to go for that too much. So I want people to originate their own monologues and make their own notes and so forth like that. Okay, DC Wolf, take it away.
Empire, Washington, D.C. on January the 19th, 2014. I have an article here in the Wall Street Journal from today. Headlines: Kabul restaurant attack targets foreigners. And this article, the story is worthy because it shows us how you bypass the firewalls put up by the global elite, the transnational parasites, and go to the heart of the matter. A Taliban suicide bomber and gunman attacked a popular restaurant frequented by foreigners in the center of Kabul, killing at least 16 people, including the International Monetary Fund's top representative in Afghanistan. The attack will likely speed the exodus by the international community, already shrinking as Western aid money dries up and the U.S.-led military coalition plans to withdraw its forces from the country by December. It was one of the deadliest Taliban attacks on foreigners in Kabul and the first in recent years, specifically singling out one of a handful of international restaurants that cater to diplomats, aid workers, and journalists living in the capital. The IMF mission head in Afghanistan, Wabil Abdallah, was among those killed, the International Lending Agency said. Mr. Abdallah, 60, was Lebanese. This is tragic news, and we at the fund are all devastated, said IMF Managing Director Christine Lagarde Sheeney. The attack began at about 7:30 p.m. with a suicide bombing that shook the central Wazir district, home to many embassies, guest houses, and restaurants, usually packed for dinner around that time. The blast sheared off the facade of the Lebanese restaurant and killed some people outside it. Well, that's collateral damage. Sorry about that. Little people got killed. Following the explosion, two other insurgents made their way into the restaurant and gunned down diners at their tables. So this is great news. Some medieval-minded tribesmen wearing about 2 kilos of Russian or Chinese-provided explosives detonated his vest and killed off a bunch of policy trash from D.C. and London. And any insurgents in the future, anywhere in any theater, can note this. This is nothing new. This is merely an example from the operating world of how you bypass all these badass security contractors and Navy SEALs and Marines and all that and get them while they're having tea. Here's another article from the same issue. EU gears up for Central Africa Force. The European Union is expected on Monday to authorize a mission to send as many as 1,000 troops to the Central African Republic to stabilize a cycle of violence in the bloc's first full military land operation in 6 years. The decision reflects concerns that intensifying religious violence in Central African Republic has displaced thousands of people, could spread to other African nations. France, which has sent 1,600 troops to the violence-torn nation, has been appealing for help. Now listen up. Europe doesn't give a rat's ass about these niggers. They're there to oust regimes that aren't friendly to transnational corporations that want their resources, and they are also there to block the Chinese, who are rapidly approaching ecological and population walls. They have to export some of their population. They have to procure water and agricultural land. They just have to bust out. The chinks have to bust out. So we're headed towards, once again, like TT says, overpopulation is the root of all evil in the world today, even though you'll never get the globalists to admit it. And it's coming down to the knife in the competition for water and food. This is an interview with a preparedness expert.
Okay, a lot of folks are beginning to try to make preparations. Don't know how many, 2, 3, 4%, 5%. Maybe, but they are trying, and Joel is without question one of the world's foremost, if not the world's foremost authority and expert on how to make preparations, at least in terms of shelter and basics and the things that we need to have a chance. Now, it is said that people who hunker down in a bunker and so forth become immediate targets for roaming and marauding bands of people who have the smarts and the wherewithal to find these places and smoke, so to speak, smoke the residents out. How do we do this with stealth and the ability to hide? We really have to be clever, don't we?
Well, you do, especially when you're dealing with the potential of mass social unrest, which is eventually going to come to this country as it gets more urbanized, and you know, urban centers simply cannot be self-sufficient, period. Even if you had a little home garden in your backyard in an urban city, it would be overwhelmed. You'd never see a crop get ripe, you know, if there was famine in that land. So, you know, I am not a big fan of armed confrontation. There is a, you know, a lot of survival talk about the redoubt, meaning a military type hunkering down with a whole bunch of like-minded people and standing, holding off the world or the U.S. Army in kind of a confrontation mode. And I don't really believe that's wise. First of all, most people can't go live in a redoubt. Groups, survival groups especially, don't do well together. Mm-hmm. I've been consulting in this area for over 45 years now, and I've never seen a survival community last more than a couple of years.
Wow.
They're too independent-minded. They mm-hmm. fall apart. They have mm-hmm. infighting. There used to be a strong man leader, and he offends a few people. Even religious groups mm-hmm. are some of the first to fall apart because of doctrinal differences or other indiscretions that usually happen with strong-type leaders. And so I really feel, and I pointed this out in my book, Strategic Relocation, about how people really need to find what fits them. You can't believe how many calls I get a month from people, well, just tell me where the safe places are and I'll just go there. And it's just not that simple. I mean, safety is inversely proportional to people and jobs. In other words, you get out into a wilderness and yeah, you got safety, but who can live there? Who can maintain your lifestyle? There's very few people that have a kind of independent income that can just go off and retire and build a complete self-sufficient fortress bunker and survive. And even those people can't handle the maintenance issue. You know, I've designed stuff all over the United States, Jeff, and the clients that have the toughest times are the ones with the most money because they buy the biggest package, the most sophisticated self-sufficiency, the generators, the solar systems, and the you know, the shelters and all the types of things that they can afford, but they don't take the time or have the skills to learn to maintain it. And when they need that, because sophisticated equipment always requires some maintenance and some adjustment and things, it just isn't going to work out well. So simpler is better. Concealed is better than confrontation. And that's one of the reasons why I don't like these self-contained variable shelters. Because they're meant to be buried out in the backyard or in the East 40 or some rural piece of land that you have, and you have these vent pipes sticking out of the ground, and you may camouflage them with a few bushes, but it's hard to camouflage a, you know, a 3-foot opening, a dome-type patch that you,
sure.
you know, get into that, and
that's
you
right.
arrive at your property, and somebody happens to have seen that thing go on the ground, and you've got a whole group of people sitting around your opening, how are you going to get in?
Yeah,
it's the same
exactly.
thing with this. It's the same yeah. thing with this great big shelter community that's being built or proposed out of the Midwest in the old salt cavern. It's got one entrance for
right.
1,000 people.
Right.
You know.
Right. Right.
And
right.
they pay. You know. But you're depending on some corporation that they're going to be there and manning that when you need to get in there.
And there'll be a complaint department you can telephone. Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And if you get there and there's 1,000 people in front of the entrance, how are you going to get in? You know, it's really better for people to have their own place that is not, you know, I tell people, don't make your home look like a fortress. You see these pictures all over the internet about people with these great big moving walls and blank, and then it opens up this beautiful
yeah.
window and things. And,
well,
and you got
comic. Comical.
I mean, but everybody in the world's going to know where that place is.
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't want to do something that obviously looks
and
like
they'll know what they'll know that there's food inside, they'll know that there are weapons inside, and they'll know that there are vent pipes, and they will go to the vent pipes and they will put stuff down the vent pipes that will force the residents to come out.
Yeah, so all of the homes that we design in our firm are basement structures where all the filtration, all the vents are taken up into the structure itself, into the attic, etc. You know, even if people, and we've done shelters underneath barns and other types of things, at least they have some place to go into where people don't see them descending into a shelter where there's concealment. Now, it's better if you have a tunnel access from the basement of a home to a barn so you don't have to cross open ground to get there. But people really need to think through these things. Well, you know, if anybody's got a basement, the cheapest way to do a shelter is to wall off a portion, shorten that basement. Depending on the layout, it can be difficult to detect, and then have it concealed open.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, concealment is not just necessary for roaming pillagers someday, which will certainly come to pass, but also government. That 1950 law is still on the books that declares that anything the government says is in short supply suddenly becomes hoarding. And you can be fined up to $10,000 a day, et cetera, you know, for hoarding something that they simply declare. It doesn't matter if you bought your food storage 20 years before when everybody could buy it. Once it's declared a shortage, it becomes hoarding. And so it's going to be very important to conceal things, even from government coming door to door, to try to inventory what you have and redistribute food to the less fortunate, the people, i.e., who didn't prepare.
When you have a home, you can build right next to the home. You can dig down. You can put in a grouted concrete. They have the styrofoam grouting walls now. They're very simple to do. Flat ceiling's not the best. You'd want an arch ceiling. You'd cover it with, 3 feet of dirt? That's all you'd need, right?
No, actually, I believe that in using thickened concrete ceilings.
Flat?
Yeah, you can make them waterproof. So,
I mean, you want a flat ceiling?
What I'm just saying is you put a building over it. You never put a shelter out, even if it's an extension of the building, without a bedroom over the top of it or something over the top.
Mm-hmm.
So then the basement portion becomes the reason for it, mm-hmm. the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you have to really look at what you've got to tell the building department. If you just put a basement out there with a concrete cap, you know, how does the building come?
Well, you'd need to cover it with 2 or 3 feet of earth and lawn, so it looks just like a lawn.
So the point is, though,
pipes.
Yeah, then your vents still have to come back into the house.
Into the house.
More secure, this roof. It still is better, though. What I'm just saying is that when you build that basement down below the ground and you pour the concrete, neighbors are going to see it. You know, it's obviously a bunker, and people will call it a bunker.
Well, the workmen building it are going to see it, too.
That's right. So if you do it as a foundation, and that's why I like safe rooms under garages, because then when you pour the thickened slab, it's a garage slab. It's to drive cars on. That's why it's so thick. You've got to have a reason to give people for these types of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put a garage addition over it, and it's the most natural thing in the world. So it's very, very important, and I discourage even my own clients from ever referring to something as a bunker. I always call them safe rooms because that isn't as scintillating to people. And when we do these where a building permit is required, you know, we'll talk about just storage rooms that we design in so that the guts of the shelter and the secure doors and the ventilation, all that's put in afterwards, but it's just a bare concrete storage room as far as when it goes on the plan. So there's a lot of things that you can do, you know, to mask these things, but being careful, having an excuse for doing these things that doesn't arouse suspicion is very, very important.
How about this idea of food? We've got freeze-dried now compared to bulk wheat in plastic canisters. What are your preferences here?
My preferences are for the bulk foods, not the freeze-dried or dehydrated. You know, they're about 10 times more in price.
And in volume, they take up space, too.
That's right. They take up more space. But
right.
The key is to stockpile a ton of wheat, rice, and beans. And, you know, rice is the perfect giveaway. If you have to give away food, give away rice, not wheat, because wheat has to have a grinder. A handful of rice can get people satisfied. They can go and boil it. Rice is a great barter item. It's a great giveaway item. And it's cheap. It's cheap. You can just stockpile it, but you do need to put it in plastic buckets. so that you keep rats and mice from accumulating near them. Plastic buckets are readily available everywhere. That's the nice thing about the prepper movement. It's gone mainstream now. There's a lot of suppliers. It used to be you couldn't find anything in the East Coast. And most of it's still out west here, but you can find things almost everywhere.
Okay, Joel, good advice. And if you folks want to find out more about...
This is an article from the January 19th Wall Street Journal. California declares drought emergency. Governor Jerry Brown has declared a drought emergency in parts of California, freeing more state resources to cope with the growing economic and environmental threat from the driest conditions on record to hit much of the Golden State. Quote, we are in an unprecedented, very serious situation, and people should pause and reflect on how dependent we are on the rain, on nature, and on one another. Now, ain't that typical Mr. Governor Moonbeam shit? The governor directed state officials to take actions, including help for farmers whose supplies have been sharply curtailed, and called for a voluntary 20% reduction in water consumption statewide. Now, you know which residents are going to be complying with the reduction, the voluntary reduction. It's going to be responsible white people. It's going to be mostly white people. Most of the Beaners, the Aztecs that are flooding in, pay no attention to it. You know they're not, because they already don't care about the environment because they throw their trash down. Continuing. Water forecasts released Wednesday by the Department of Agriculture predict generally dry conditions west of the Continental Divide for the next 6 months. Now, this is applying to all of the West, to all of the Southwest. You see, reality is catching up. As long as the population density, was reasonable, you could take that mountain runoff and redirect it to the coasts and to the valleys where the population is, and it was enough water to go around. But they're pushing the limit now, and this was inevitable. Water experts could have told you this years ago, that this time would come. California's got something like 35 million people that we know about, and who knows how many millions more that we don't know about. And California grows food for half the country. It's an agricultural breadbasket, and that's the major industry there, if it isn't aerospace. And if you, so what do? You give the majority of the water to the industry that generates the most gross domestic product for the state, or do you give the majority of the water to the hordes of Aztecs and other third worlders who are rushing in to get El Good Life? Now, this is why we know that California is going to go down, because California is utterly dominated by utopian and Marxist liberals, and they're going to keep feeding the black-eyed locusts who pour into the state and putting the farmers up against the fence. So California's going down, which is good news. Continuing. California, with its huge economy, the financial impacts are likely to ripple beyond the farmers. Growers in the Central Valley's Westlands Water District, for instance, are expected to fallow 200,000 of their 600,000 acres this year, resulting in job losses in surrounding communities. So these farmers are taking a third of their removing a third of their productivity. And this is just the beginning. Now, moving east, water problems continued. This is another article. Water ban ends for most in spill area, Charleston, West Virginia. Water was restored here Friday for nearly all 300,000 people affected by a chemical spill that contaminated the supply for more than a week, as new details emerged about the company at the center of the incident. The lifting of the wide water ban marked a turning point in a crisis that began January 9th after authorities said that a substance called MCHM leaked from a storage tank, breached a faulty containment wall, and infiltrated a water treatment plant. Now, ain't that strange? Ain't that strange that in an area, in a city of 300,000, in a population whose culture is very nature-intensive, the West Virginians, in a facility that's been there for decades, the spill breaches three firewalls. It goes through 1, 2, 3 security barriers and enters the Ohio River and the drinking supply. It sounds like sabotage to me, people, because we know what the transglobalists think of rural white people. We know that the transglobalists in D.C. want to depopulate the interior and free up all that land to put it on the international market for the water, for the minerals, for the timber. So I think this was sabotage. The owner of this chemical plant is Freedom Industries, Inc., and they've already filed for Chapter 11 because they're going to be sued out of existence anyway. The company said that it and, quote, investigative authorities have taken note of the hole in the affected storage tank that appears to have come from an object piercing upwards. Little is known about the health effects on humans of crude MCHM, which is used in coal processing. It largely consists of a chemical called 4-methylcyclohexane methanol and has 6 other components according to the manufacturer. Now, these poor people in Charleston can't drink and probably shouldn't be taking showers either. And this crap is going to find its way into the Ohio River, which is going to find its way to the Mississippi, which is going to go down to the Gulf. Who knows what effect this is going to have? I mean, if you hate white people, especially rural white people, this is great, man. This is like Fukushima in North America. We're starting to get a feel for the parasitic and, above all, relentless and infinitely energetic nature of transglobal capitalism. I'm going to play you an excerpt from a fellow who writes about this sort of thing. It's a radio interview.
It covers
resistors. This is DC Scout signing out. Remember, don't trust anybody on a government pension, and never, ever trust a Jew.
Well, that's it, boys and girls. Thank you, DC Scout. I had to edit a little bit of that out. But anyhow, I started recording this after I did that long 2-hour MP3 file. I had it on 16 MG, and normally we record at 32. I don't think it made too much difference, but it makes some difference, I know. So anyhow, that's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow, I think, with Stray Dog. We've missed him for a couple of weeks. Not his fault. Mine the first time and mine the second time, because I was out of town the second time. So anyhow, he should be back on here and tell us all about Fat Tony from New Jersey and what's going on back there at the Atlantic Coast. 14-5. And in the meantime, as Roy Rogers used to say, or Gabby Hayes used to say, happy trails, Roy, and happy trails to you, Trigger. Last time I saw you were stuffed in a museum out there in California. Oh, this is Gabby Hayes signing off.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds if we're together? Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather. Happy trails to you.
14.5.